on today.
So you just launched your, you just dropped your first podcast episode, right? Like that was yesterday?
I did. Yeah, that was yesterday.
So what platform are you using to host it on? Have you locked all that in for sure?
So, yeah, I think right now I'm using the Spotify for podcasters. And I think they're partnering, or they have a partnership with Riverside for like recording. I know they have some updates coming, I think like in June or something like that, where I think before you could record on Spotify, but you won't be able to, you'll have to record directly on Riverside, which is fine. But that right now that process is working for me. So get into Riverside, record video and audio. I haven't decided if I'm going to use video at all, maybe for like some promo clips here and there, but, yeah, just, and then taking the audio, doing some edits, mostly in, I'm actually using Clipchamp for like edits and like piecing it together and then exporting it from there, and uploading it to Spotify.
I'm always interested in hearing other people's process. Mark Bradbourne and I both started on a different platform, and we're both on Spotify for podcasters now. It's ease of use is much, I mean, the threshold for getting started is much lower and much simpler, and they don't charge you. Like previously, I was paying $15 a month for the privilege of having a podcast. And it's not like you're 99.999% of podcasts make absolutely no money. I think I make like $6 a month now, thanks to $11 a month, thanks to my lovely patrons. And I will shout them out at the end of the episode. So thanks for everyone that does that. But yeah, like I use Audacity, which is a free editing software. I probably know the most basic level of audio editing to do on it, but it's the kind of stuff that's like the threshold for entry. And I think like you're saying with audio, like I've got video for every episode and I've never used any of it most of the time because I don't tell people we're capturing the video because I don't plan on using it. And that would, you know, yeah, people want to look their best. You don't want to put them out there. And also like that's a whole extra thing for me to do.
Exactly. Yes. The recording I do for Back to Viz Basics is like the absolute maximum amount of video editing I want to do. It's not my strong suit. I think I figured it out pretty, you know, I've got it to a point now where it's like pretty easy to do and repeat, but man, the first few times going through it, I was like, this is, my voice is off from my video and like all this stuff. It's like, this is just so much extra stuff that I don't want to deal with right now. But it all came together. It's all good. But yeah, the podcast I'm super pumped about, figuring it out, like you said, with Spotify for podcasters makes it super easy. It's free. There's like paid versions of Riverside, but like I'm not using those right now. I don't think there's really a point for me for that. But yeah, I think the ease of use in finding a tool is like what I always look for. Not that I don't want to rack my brain too hard, but like it should be pretty easy for me to figure out how to use.
I mean, yeah, you're already a technical guy. And for those of you that aren't in the know, Eric has launched a new podcast, Data After Hours, and we will be including a clip of it at the end of this episode. So make sure to check that out. The first episode is already up, featuring Bo McCready. So if you're into Eric, into Bo, or just into getting to know data people more based on their interests and behind the scenes, make sure to check that out. Hang on to the end to get the clip. What made you, okay, so obviously you don't have enough going on, right? So you work at Lovelytics, you run Back to Viz Basics. You also took over the Tableau student guide from Maria Brock, which I reference all of my students to when I'm teaching in my off hours. You just became a Tableau visionary a couple weeks ago. And you're like, hey, oh, and you're a newlywed. Hey.
And new homeowner.
I don't have enough going on podcast. So what, where did Data After Hours come from?
Yeah. You know, when you lay it all like lay it out like that, it's, I don't know why I continue to give myself no time for things, but, yeah, it actually stemmed from a project that one of my friends totally outside the data community was doing. He's super into video editing and, you know, making small video, like little clips and stuff like that. So he actually started a podcast called 5 to 9, but it's very similar, but it's based in like the real estate industry. So that's what he's in. So he'll meet with folks. His is video based, but he'll do like a quick like 2-minute video, you know, on this person about their hobbies and interests outside of your normal 9 to 5 hours. So he and I were talking and he's like, oh, you should do one in like, you know, the Tableau space. I was like, oh, yeah, yeah, that would be pretty fun. And so I was like, oh, yeah, let me do this. And so it just like it kicked off. And sometimes I have a tendency of like posting things and sharing things out before I actually figure out how I'm going to do it. But then it like forces me to actually get it done. So, yeah, it's been really fun and I'm excited to do it. I think it's a little bit of a different flavor where, you know, just putting work aside, like who is everybody? What do you do for fun? Like there are some really interesting hobbies out there. So I just want to uncover those and see what, you know, folks in the community are up to. So I'm really excited to kind of kick that off, and we got a pretty good lineup coming up, and yeah, I can't wait to see where it goes.
I think it's interesting to know what informs people's work, like their backgrounds and their interests and those kinds of things. All of that factors in, I mean, to who we are as a complete person, and obviously who we are as a person impacts, you know, how we relate to others, the kind of work we create, what our interests are. So I think that's neat. I also appreciate you sort of like doing the Babe Ruth and pointing to the fences and like calling out your first like 8 guests.
Yeah.
I think before I released the first episode of this, I had 3 recordings done because I'm like, I don't know how long it takes to make these, you know?
Yes.
Especially when you're getting started and you're still like, you're learning the process and the tools and the like cycles and promotion and stuff like that.
Yep.
I'm actually terrible at promoting this podcast, and I actually don't ask for people to listen as much as I should. I don't ask for people to, hey, you know, you can support this podcast. I don't do that stuff. Like yeah. I'm actually a very poor businessman, but I really am. But I sort of, you know, like you came up with your concept, the concept for this, I was like, well, I think this would be something cool. It's something I want to do. I don't know how to do it. Mm-hmm. So what do I do? And you know, I know you reached out, you did research and stuff like that. And one of the reasons I wouldn't have you on to talk about this, even though you've been on before and you're like, I've been on before. Is that okay, man? It's like, I wanted to have you on for at least no other reason than first to congratulate you on becoming a visionary. Awesome.
Thank you.
But second, like we're not competitors in any way. Like I don't want people to think because there's multiple data podcasts that in any way, like we are all like competing for your attention or your ears. Like much like DataViz and much like anything else, like you can like everything. It's okay. Like this is not a zero sum game. Like if you like Eric's show more, that's fantastic. I'm happy that you do. Like seriously, you will definitely be some people's cup of tea more. And that's perfect. And that's one of the reasons I wanted to have you on, both to promote you and also encourage you to say, hey, I think it's a great year that you're doing this. Anyone else that wants to do a podcast or be in a similar space, I 100% support you. I want you to do it. And also reach out for me if you have questions. Like I want people to succeed and be happy in what they do.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, just the collaboration on things is one of the biggest things that I've learned just in my experience with the data community is, you know, for the most part, everyone is here to help support each other and help each other grow. So, you know, I appreciate you answering my questions about just your experience with podcasting. I went through the same thing when I was doing like the DataViz prints and stuff. Jeff Plattner went through it. Some other names are slipping out of my mind, but there's a lot of us who are trying to, you know, figure out a way to print our visualizations. And that whole process is so difficult to figure out. And, you know, we would have calls, talk about it, figure out what worked for other people, what didn't. And, you know, like you said, there's no competition. It's just that everybody is always there to help each other, you know, grow and succeed. And it's really nice to see.
I think it comes down to a matter of mindset. And if you sort of view those around you as competition, it's really going to sort of influence how you see the world and how you treat others. And I mean, your success isn't my failure. There's plenty of success for everyone. And, you know, I think sometimes, you know, on Tableau Public and stuff, for example, you might see, I know I'm guilty of, I'll call myself as the example here. Last summer, I think, what is it? Data Capitalist or whatever it is, the news site posted a stream viz of the changing forms of media over time as a stream graph. And it was like, it's the exact same thing I made once before. And I was like, what the crap? Cause I've submitted stuff to them before Visual Capitalist and they never picked any of my stuff. And then I saw something that was like identical to something I'd done. And I sort of posted like, I was just, it was like a Saturday afternoon. My wife and I were going over to someone's house for a barbecue. Like one of her friends. So like, I'm already sort of keyed up. And like, I don't know anyone here. I'm stressed out. And then I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, you don't take my stuff. And then you do something exactly. And I posted something. And then Lindsay Betzendahl's like, yeah, like 2 years before you did that, someone else did the exact same one. I'm like, oh, God. You know, it's one of those things where like I was so wrapped up in how I felt about it that I sort of took a snipe at somebody. And then I was like, you know what? Like, that was dumb. I'm sorry. I own that. I apologize. Like, I wasn't in like a good headspace when I said this. And I try, you know, you try to be like, it's very easy to feel like you own something, or like because you were the first one there that it's the, like you stake the claim. And I think like, you know, I created a John Wick data set several years ago by watching all the movies, and I did a viz, David Kelly did a viz, and Kate Schaub did a viz, and then I did a couple more. And if you go on Tableau Public and type in John Wick, you'll find hundreds of John Wick vizes, most of which are just like direct copies of ours where they change one or two things. And like, I don't get stressed out about that because I know I made what I made and I'm happy with it. And I don't really have anything I feel like I need to prove. And like, swatting someone else down doesn't like add to that. So I don't know where I'm going with this. I'm rambling, and part of this is catharsis of me like, I was an asshole like last summer, and I wanted to say that like it's really easy to get possessive of something and feel like you own that. So yeah, like I just want to encourage people, you know, make stuff. It's okay.
I'm assuming. I think the one of my visits, the time we had one that really took off. When I search that on Tableau Public, I see that, you know, on 50 different people's profiles, and yeah, that's fine. It's like sometimes I think people just, you know, they go in, they save it to their own profile because it's something that they like rather than favoriting it, and like that's fine. You know, especially when it comes to like the Tableau resumes, like. The reason my resume looks the way it does is because I saw one on Pinterest or whatever that someone else did, not in Tableau. And I was like, hey, I really like the design. I'm going to copy that one. And so, you know, I just made it in Tableau. So I don't mind if someone goes in and copies that stuff. So, you know, I think it's everybody learns from each other, and that's how you just get better. So.
Oh yeah, for sure. And like very few of us ever have any original ideas. Like I'm not the first podcaster to be talking about Tableau and data. Like there was before me, the Tableau Wannabe podcast, which then became Tableau World, and with Emily and Matt. And I actually asked both of them before I started this. I was like, hey guys, I'm thinking about doing something. Like I don't want to step, like I don't want you to feel like I'm stepping on your toes because like I'm not doing this in this way. And that was like an example of like a much smaller space, you know, with like Tableau Public or with any sort of data visualization. It's much more Wild Westy and large. And there's thousands of people making stuff all the time. And it's, I mean, really, I sort of I prefer to attribute like, you know, like goodwill, like try to default towards goodwill towards people and generosity, you know, when you see stuff. And like, I'm just like, I'm really excited about all the potential out there. I'm also excited about Tableau Conference this year. I'm seeing like a whole lot of people getting selected to speak for the first time. And I think that's really exciting. You know, I know like, I spoke last year. I enjoyed the hell out of it. Annabelle Rincon and I applied to speak this year. We didn't get accepted, and I'm disappointed, but that also means I have more time to chill. But yeah, it's like there's a lot of people like my buddy David Kelly, who has sort of been a wallflower in the Tableau community for a long time. He's amazing. He does great work at work, but hasn't been as active publicly. He has been selected to speak, and then he just told me, he texted me like while we were starting, I have two sessions now. I don't even know how I have two sessions. But like, I know he's stressed about that, but I'm super excited for him that he's finally getting a chance to get some of like the visibility and respect that I have for him, and to have it on a larger scale. Is there anyone you're really excited to see for the first time?
So my colleagues Agata Ketterick and Kayla Swain were accepted as first-time speakers. So both Tableau ambassadors, but first-time speakers at Tableau Conference. They'll be doing a presentation on dates, and I'm really excited to see that. So I know they're a little nervous, but I think they're going to be great. So I'm really excited to see them on stage, and especially the content around that. I think date calculations in Tableau are. They take a while to figure out and learn, and so you know, and you can splice them and do whatever you want, and there's always a different scenario for every client that you work with. So I'm excited to see what they put together for everybody. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to Tableau Conference this year. Kate Soika and I were accepted to speak. We'll be doing stuff on some text tables, and then I'll also be running a Back to Viz Basics live session again. So.
That's fantastic. Is the Back to Viz Basics, do you know if they're still doing a Makeover Monday live, or is this more of a substitute for that? Do you know?
I don't know what community sessions are going to be live this year outside of my own. So I know they kind of had to go through a different speaker like registration process or submission process. They reached out to us individually, so I'm not sure which ones will be presenting.
That'll be cool. I think that's always a great sort of community building exercise because it brings together a lot of people in one place. And I know I made a lot of connections doing Makeover Monday Live. I met a lot of people I didn't know before or met a lot of people for the first time. So those kinds of opportunities are just really great for meeting, you know, different colleagues from around the world of different skill levels and, you know, hopefully, you know, making some new connections.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I remember my very first like one or two Tableau conference, the Makeover Monday Live session was huge. I mean, like tons of tables, a huge room. Last year was a little small. I think at most there, I think there might've been 8 tables of 10. So we could only fit like a max of like, you know, 80 to 100 people in there. I think for most of the live sessions, they were all filled up. But yeah, man, I remember the Makeover Monday session was like huge. So yeah, it'd be nice to get back to that level of attendance for those sessions. But it's I think it's positioned a little bit differently where it's in the middle of conference rather than being like the day before. So, you know, a little bit harder to fit in with a bunch of other sessions.
There's a lot of stuff that sort of got shifted around in that way. Like I do remember some of those earlier Makeover Mondays where it was a large ballroom full of tables. Like the audience it commanded was very huge. Yes. And I know that last year, and this is not inside baseball, this was publicly shared on Twitter, it almost didn't happen at all because Andy Kriebel submitted Makeover Monday for a session and it got rejected. And then he sort of posted a post on Twitter like, hey, I guess nobody wants this. And then there was a quick public reversal like, no, it's cool. We want Makeover Monday. So I think sometimes maybe some of the people with their hands on the levers of like bookings and stuff like that, maybe don't know some of the things that are more like, you know, I guess either substantial or like considered a standard part of the conference. I also remember some of the early Fanalytics events that were part of the conference, either being held the very last day or almost after the conference was over, as sort of like a large community event that would have like feedback sessions with Tableau and then the Vizzies as part of that, as hosted by Matt and Emily. And last year, like the Vizzies were sort of like a one-off session in the middle of the conference. Mm-hmm. So, you know, some of that stuff gets shifted around. I understand like, you know, ownership change, a lot of personnel has changed, you know, the conference itself has changed. But yeah, some of those things used to be in different places in different capacities. Yeah. And I don't know if that's either good or bad. It's just different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I am excited for the change to San Diego, though. I love Vegas. Like my wife and I, she's been to Vegas at least like 25 times. Like it's like her second home. She loves it. So I've gotten really into it just from like the shows, the food. Like I love walking the strip and just like observing all the life forms that descend upon Vegas. But I'm excited to change and go to San Diego. My very first Tableau conference was New Orleans. So you know, kind of the same flavor of, you know, not everything is going to be in Mandalay Bay, which is nice. So, you know, things will be kind of changed up a little bit, different hotels all over the place. So I'm looking forward to being in a different city this year, but I guess I will miss Vegas a little bit.
I'm excited for it too. I've never actually been to San Diego. I think one of the challenges will be in Las Vegas. Everyone sort of knew where stuff was and knew where you could find people. And with so many people being here for the first time, especially in the context of a conference, I think it's going to be a little bit wild westy with a lot of people scrambling to find like, where is stuff? Where is this happening? Yeah. Where is that kind of thing? So that'll be interesting. But I see people already sort of coalescing together and forming like their own little events and stuff. I see In-N-Out runs already being set up with a people taking trolleys out of the conference center area to go a half hour away to get In-N-Out, which I may be down for. Like I had In-N-Out for the first time back in January when I was in Palm Springs. It's fantastic. Like I'll totally do that as an excuse to hang out with some people.
Yeah. If you have time, you have to check out the Midway ship that's there. When we were in San Diego, we did that and I could have spent all day on that thing. It is incredible how it is just like a floating city on water, and I mean it's massive. So if you do have time, make sure you carve out some time to go check out that. It's incredible.
I'm coming in midday on Saturday, so I'm pretty sure I can make that happen. Oh, so yeah, absolutely. That sounds awesome.
Yeah, definitely recommend.
Very cool. So you you've been at Lovelytics for quite some time now, and you just had Chantilly become a Hall of Fame visionary. I'm excited to hear her on your podcast. She's one of those guests that I've always been nervous to ask, just because I've always really looked up to her, but I don't really have any kind of relationship with her. Like, she's one of my early inspirations for sure, in terms of like my tableau, my like, oh, I didn't know I could do this, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, Chantilly, she's been working with Tableau, gosh, I mean, for a very long time. And I think in terms of just the community growing, she was one of the very early folks in that, you know, cohort that was really taking the visualization piece to the next level. And I remember, you know, seeing her stuff. I saw her speak about millennials and data at Tableau conference during Fanalytics in New Orleans for the first time. And I think that session of Fanalytics really got me connected into the community and just like really excited about data visualization as a whole. So when I moved to DC, I knew that Chantilly was in the area. I reached out to her to join Millennials in Data. We got connected, and she has been just like an awesome mentor and honestly like one of my best friends since I moved here. Unfortunately, she's moved to New Orleans, so I don't really get to see her as much anymore. But she's great. And I'm super excited that, you know, she was recognized and for the Hall of Fame this year. But once you get to Daria, she's a hoot. I give her so much crap all the time, and you know, we pick fun at each other. So she's doing really well, and I'm really excited to for her and the Hall of Fame recognition. It's totally warranted and deserved, and I couldn't be happier for her.
She's one of the examples I give on one of the best conference presentations I've ever seen, where she had a large ballroom, which like spaces used to be significantly larger for some of the bigger sessions. She had a very large ballroom, and she did a presentation on templates and how many of the things she makes might look quite different, but they're using the same underlying structure and sort of introducing people to the idea that you can, you know, use templates to lay stuff out in advance and you know, have a framework that you can work in so that you're not having to recreate the wheel every time. And at the end of this session, like, I don't think I'm exaggerating when I say like 150 to 200 people like mobbed the stage to ask her questions.
Yes.
It was insane. Like that, my entire session last year seated 200, and they said my numbers were 275. And I basically credit that to the fact that there's not enough seating at any of the sessions and people sort of overflowed. But like, she had as many people as were in my entire session rush the stage like she was Mick Jagger.
Yes. Yes. I was there and I remember that. And I was like, I'll talk to you later.
Yeah.
Like, I remember everybody coming up. I mean, it was thinking about the other Tableau conference presentations I've seen. I think that was one that like really kind of shifted the gears from like, here's how you do this in Tableau. Or here's how you, it really focused on like design. And, you know, her whole thing was, you don't have to be a designer to be good at design. Like, my whole background is not, I'm not a graphic designer or any of that type of stuff, but just based off of certain things I've learned from her and just other really simple techniques, like it totally can elevate your visual design in a dashboard. And so I think that's why that session was so impactful, because, you know, it wasn't just like, hey, this is how you do parameters, or this is how you do, you know, dynamic sorting. I don't know, just random things like that. It's like, these are all very simple things that all of us can start doing to take our dashboards from being a 5 out of 10 to a 10 out of 10. And I think, you know, seeing how everybody reacted was just like, yeah, we can all do this. Like, thank you so much. I want to connect with you. So, and plus it's Chantilly, like, she's just got some awesome swag about her, and she's super cool. So, you know, how could you not want to, you know, go and chat with her? So.
Well, yeah, it's like they say, you eat with your eyes, you know, like if you ever watch a Food Network show, they're not just judging the food based on how it tastes, but they're looking for presentation as well. Presentation has a huge factor in adoption of your BI products, sort of people's willingness to use them. I will give the example of, my kids are on spring break, so they're both hanging out around the house. And my 12-year-old yesterday brought me a jar of, I'm going to be generous here, it looked like baby food. It was mashed up by hand strawberries and mangoes and some other stuff. And it was the most vile, unattractive looking thing ever. and she really, really wanted me to taste this. And I'm like, oh, I don't want to eat that. She's like, I worked really hard on it. And I'm just looking at it and I'm like, do I really have to? And like, she'd even carved, like she had carved a Z out of a piece of apple and put it on top of it. And I'm like, I'm going to have to taste this, aren't I? So I tasted it. And to my surprise, it wasn't that bad. It was, it's, it was a 5 out of 10.
It's just like a thicker smoothie.
It was edible, but not like desirable, you know? So I ate it to appease her. And that's very much like you can make a dashboard that is entirely functional, meets the needs of what's being asked, and they just won't be excited or interested in using it. Like, it, you know, design goes such a long way. And I think design is one of those elements where in BI, we often don't put as much emphasis on it. Like, design's not the be all end all. You can design stuff that looks great and it's garbage, but you can also make stuff that's very technically sound and meets the requirements and also be bland. It's that sort of synthesis between the two where you both have to be technically adept to create the thing in the first place. And then you have to sort of be aesthetically aligned to understand what will go down smooth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that's if you know, anyone has ever taken her Millennials in Data Bootcamp, that's one of the things that we emphasize from the very first week is design, where we have a scorecard. We take them through how to build out some very simple KPIs, bar charts, line charts for this scorecard. But the thing that we really emphasize is the design piece. We teach them, you know, how to change background color, how to play with like the size and the marks, how to add white space between the dashboards and padding. So we kind of emphasize that stuff from the beginning. And I think that really helps, you know, kind of accelerate their growth in terms of design throughout the course, because we've been hitting on that stuff from the beginning. And I think I've seen a lot of trainings where we save design for the end. And it's like, well, now I just learned how to build all these charts. I'm comfortable in the way that I've done that. But now you're telling me how to change it and do it differently. So let's emphasize that from the beginning and focus on, hey, white space here, padding here, you know, here are some just standard guidelines and templates to follow. And then, you know, your chart will fit into this space. And here's some ways that you can kind of play with formatting and, you know, the marks card to make that look better. So I think that's one of the things I really like about her Millennials and Data program is we emphasize the design aspect from the beginning.
I like to think of it, you know, people use the term data storytelling, and I've joked at work that this is like one of my trigger words. Like when I hear that, I know many times someone's about to say something weird or something quirky or something, you know, something that throws it off. But it's not a wrong phrase or wrong expression. You are often telling stories with data. I think data storytelling sometimes is abused, meaning like make this data literally spell out sentences and construct a thought for me. When in reality, data is more like a comic book page where you have an establishing shot to show where it's taking place. You have a panel that's showing, you know, two characters, and then you have the action that's occurring between those, and then some sort of catharsis at the end to lead you into the next idea. Mm-hmm. So like, that's how I think of data storytelling in terms of I'm knitting together different ideas. And I see sometimes one of the like, when people are earlier in their careers or just learning, you know, the tools and the concepts, oftentimes they'll have those elements, but they just won't have them in the correct sequence. You know, that they'll have the most aggregated version of the data at the bottom right-hand corner of the page and the upper left-hand corner of the page, a highly detailed list view that scrolls endlessly. And it's, you know, you're trying to explain to them reading left to right, I'm looking for the most summarized concepts that tell me the biggest ideas. And then as I get towards the end of it, then I want all my details and like to let it flow in that direction.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally agree. And I think that's just emphasizing that type of stuff from the beginning of someone that's starting out, you know, super important. Even, you know, back to Viz Basics, that's why it's not just, hey, build a bar chart or build a line chart. Like sometimes it's things like our recent one, you know, play with size, like just focus on playing with size in the marks card. And, you know, see how that affects your visualization. Some of those, not exactly sure the right way to describe that skill set, but like focusing on those things, you know, can really kind of elevate your dashboard. So, you know, I think if, like you said, finding that good balance of, okay, I've, you know, been able to answer these, you know, business questions in the right way, but then also being able to visualize them effectively, you know, finding that balance between the two is really important.
I think that's one of the ways that data visualization is more challenging than some of the previous, like maybe IT roles I had before I got explicitly into data. where you can be like very technically good. Like you can take the requirements that are given to you in data visualization, like deliver on those things, like go down the checkbox, having met each of those, and ultimately make something that's very disappointing and dissatisfying to the client.
Yeah.
You know, it's because you have to have the marriage between the two of those, where if you were like, I don't know, writing an API or something, if they tell you this checklist and you satisfy the checklist, you did it. Like you're done. Yeah. Like there's not really a lot of room for sort of aesthetics or flow, or, you know, you could choose a color scheme that's either garishly distracting or so neutral that nothing pops out of it.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think that's where, you know, we kind of have a good balance. I think just like how we operate at Levelytics, like we have a good amount of folks that technically sound like they, you know, they ask all the right questions, things that I don't even think about at times. But then when it comes, you know, to time to like build the dashboard, it's like, that's where I can step in because that's where I feel comfortable, or like where I can really accelerate things. So yeah, I totally agree. And just like having that balance is important. But data visualization itself, I never thought I would get into this field, but I've found like such a huge love for it because I just really have attached to the design aspect of it. And that's what I love so much.
I mean, that's, I think everyone sort of has their area that they're most into. Like I was saying earlier, my pal David, who's going to be speaking at the conference, he's really into ETL. He loves the data design aspect. And with prep becoming a larger part of Tableau, he saw the Data Plus Movies data set and said, this is really big. I bet I can make it smaller. And through working with prep, which he had never actually used before, he's a SQL guy, he was able to compress it down to, I think, a fifth of its original size and then continue to add more data to it. So now that his model has become the official model that's being used for all the Data Plus Movie deployments by Tableau.
Oh, wow. Awesome.
Which is really awesome. Like that's really cool to not only, you know, be able to do that personally to say like, hey, look what I was able to do, but then to be recognized for it. And that's one of the reasons he's speaking at the conference this coming year, because they sort of recognize, hey, that's really awesome. And honestly, I think prep is a sort of neglected area of Tableau in terms of community. I don't think we have as much representation around that as like people that are like prep people. Like Jared Flores is obviously a really big voice, and he's a visionary now, I think, for the second year. But outside of that, there aren't like a ton of really notable prep people. There are prep people, but it's a much smaller sort of wing of the different, areas of interest.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. That's an area I got to get better at. Like I've been like holding that over my head for so long. And it's just like, if I wasn't taking on so many other projects, I'd dedicate some more time to it. But I think it's one of those things where it's like, I need to be forced to do that, or I'm just not going to carve out the time for it.
You know, I'm going to take a step back here. We're going to take a step back from all that. So like we said, your Tableau student guide, back to Viz Basics, you're doing millennials and data, you're at work, you're married, you've got a house. You just became a Tableau visionary. You've already been a Tableau ambassador for four terms now. So you've been at this a while. I'm going to say this for you and also for anyone else out there. This is going to be specific to the fact that you just became a Tableau visionary, because that's what someone told me back when it happened for me. So I never intended to be one. I never thought I had a chance of being one. It was never something I was shooting for. I wanted to be like a Tableau ambassador. I like sort of connecting people and stuff. But when I became a Tableau visionary, there was this initial feeling of panic and freaking out and like, okay, so what does that mean? Like, what am I supposed to do now? Like, what do they want from me? And the answer is, you're already doing it. Like, if you got selected for this, you're already doing what they wanted you to do. So like, you don't need to do anything more. If you're doing something more, do it because it's what you want to do, not because you think you're supposed to be chasing something else. Mm-hmm. And for anyone else that is, you know, looking at improving themselves, or it, you know, was hoping to become a visionary or ambassador or anything else, and it hasn't happened for you, I would say, I think most people that I've had on that have any of those statuses have experienced that themselves. They also probably thought at different points it was never going to happen for them. And for the most part, one of the most important skills you can have is tenacity. So just keep going. Like, don't stop. If this is something that you enjoy, if this is something you care about growing in, just keep going. So in your case, if picking up prep is sort of that keep going for you, absolutely do it. But you've got so much going on, man.
I know. Like, well, now the house projects have started. So we've been, we're officially DIYers, I guess you can call us, you know.
Oh, no.
Watching so many YouTube videos and Instagram reels on how to do board and batten and all that type of stuff. So we've made a lot of good progress. It's been fun, but I'll echo what you said. I haven't felt any added pressure since being recognized for that. I think, I know what you said, like I found my niche within the community of like, I like training. I like keeping like back to biz basics, like helping students. I learned Tableau as a student. So like, if I can give back in that space and that's where my focus is, like, that's what I really enjoy. So like, I actually haven't felt like really any added pressure, which I guess is a good thing, but, yeah, I'm super excited to be part of the cohort. I think looking back at my Tableau career, like when I first learned about the community and started realizing, like learning about all these community projects, seeing people on Twitter, like I got all jazzed up about it and got so excited. And so I remember reaching out to somebody, I'd have to look back through like LinkedIn about, hey, what's a Tableau ambassador? Like, how do I become one? And like, here I am now. And it's funny. And so, there's so many people that like I could thank. I listed a bunch of them in my LinkedIn post, and just different bosses and colleagues I've had over the years that have just, you know, fostered my growth and been supportive. And it's been really great, and I'm excited just to, you know, kind of have this, you know, added platform to be able to, you know, share back to biz basics, help people learn Tableau, share the student guide, do the podcast. Like, it's just it's nice to have that and be able to give back to help other people who were in my position at one point, you know, kind of continue to grow in Tableau and data visualization.
That's awesome. I think that's why people get picked. Like, people get picked because they, you know, they've not only have they shown personal and, you know, professional growth, but because they're the kind of person that wants to pour back into others. And I think it's a way of recognizing. Obviously, it's also a marketing thing. Like, let's be real here. Like, Tableau picks people because this is good for sales. But like, it's personally, it's a way of saying like, hey, you like investing in others and you like putting back in, refilling the pot, as it were. Like, we all throughout our careers are benefiting from work that others have put in before us, and, you know, different things others have created. So like, there is no like, you know, person that just sort of developed like in a vacuum. You know, everyone, you know, benefited from other people's work that came before them. So, you know, if you're the kind of person that likes putting back in and helping other people, like, I think that's the kind of person that everyone gets excited by.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I have a question for you.
Okay.
So in terms of, you know, are you a homeowner?
I am a homeowner. Yes.
So what is the most difficult thing about being a homeowner?
Everything breaking all the time. And not just the house itself, but appliances. There was a period about 8 years ago where I couldn't go like 3 months without an appliance breaking. So it's like the dishwasher goes, then the stove goes. My stove that was in my house was in a regular size, but that wasn't evident. So you buy a new stove. They don't have those regular sizes anymore. Your new stove has to be cut into your counter, and now it sticks out slightly. Washer breaks, then your dryer breaks, then all of your HVAC things break. Then the roof goes at some point. Like, everything is breaking off. Like, if you want to experience like it's a microcosm for reality, but entropy in terms of a house, like, this thing wants to die. Like, it doesn't want to keep going, and it's just constantly on its way out. So as the homeowner, you're currently literally in the honeymoon stage of both life and homeownership.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, it's all new, not necessarily the house. I don't know if your house is brand new or not, but at this point, it's all very new and exciting. At a certain point, it starts to turn on you. We have cats. The cats are trying to destroy the carpet upstairs. So now we have to replace the carpet. But if I replace the carpet, they'll destroy the new carpet. Mm-hmm. If I put in hardwood, then the entire house will be extremely loud from having, you know, hardwood upstairs. You know, it's always one thing or the other. But I don't know, finding the pleasure in sort of maintaining the house, like, not like in a Hank Hill, King of the Hill sort of way where you're just like, that becomes your religion.
Yeah.
But like, you know, just sort of finding the stuff that you like that keeps you going and makes it fun. But yeah, I don't know. I like decorating my office. I'm working on putting prints up all over it. So finding ways to keep your spaces new and interesting and to make it someplace you like to be, especially since I work from home. Like, it's really important that this be a place that I like to be.
Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I have a very blank wall behind me, which actually I think I kind of like the lightness of the wall behind me. But man, in our townhouse, I used to work in the basement with like very minimal light. So I finally have like a nice big window in my office. Like I can see the sun. Like I'm feeling better already. But yeah, I think what I've realized, because we started a few projects already, because it's like, all right, we want to do this before we can unpack this box. And I want to say we've only been here 3 coming up on 4 weeks, a month, actually this week. And we're about 90% unpacked, I'd say. Like we're doing pretty well. Nothing's decorated, but it's at least in a space and it's unpacked. But there's a few things where it's like, hey, we're not going to do this until we get this project done. So we've made some progress there, and it's been good. We've learned a lot. Like I'm by no means a handyman. Actually, at Seiku Tyler, when he was at Lovelytics, like he was like, hey, like send me your wedding registry, and we had some tools on there. He's like, I didn't know you were a builder. I was like, I am by no means a builder, man. I'm not a builder at all, but I'm going to try. And obviously, YouTube, and you can learn anything through YouTube. But I think what I've learned so far is nothing is straight in a house, which like drives me nuts, because I'm like measuring everything perfectly, and then it's like, well, this wall's crooked. I can't put this board up here because this wall's crooked. So it's been a good learning progress. We've, like I said, we made a lot of progress so far in some projects. The house is coming together, but it's great. Our dog loves it. We're gonna be here forever. It'll be a great place to raise our family, and we're super excited about it. But yeah, I think the learning about how just nothing is, it's not perfect has been a learning curve.
I think that's a big, like, it like, again, another microcosm for life. Nothing's perfect. The door in my office doesn't completely shut, like it used to. It doesn't now. There's minor shifts that can impact things. Maybe I can, like, maybe I can change the frame. Maybe I can change the way the door hangs. Maybe I can fix all that. But sort of like I don't know. It's a microcosm for aging. It's a microcosm for the world. It's like, it's everything. But yeah, like that wall's not straight. And learning to live with that. Like, okay, so how do I either make that work, or how do I accept that and, moving on? But this has been awesome. It's been great to talk to you again. I'm looking forward to seeing you at the conference. And anyone that is going, make sure to check out Eric's session. Also, make sure to check out his new podcast, Data After Hours, and stay tuned at the end of this for a clip from that. Is there anything else you want to shout out or promote before we wrap up today?
No. I honestly oh man, I have nothing to shout out. I just like honestly a huge shout out just to the community for their support over my Tableau, journey and career. I wouldn't be where I'm at today if it wasn't for everybody else. So just there's been quite a few folks that have been really pivotable. Whatever, super helpful in me learning and growing, and I'm really thankful for them. And for anybody that supports the podcast or participates in Back to Biz Basics, thank you so much. Like that means the world to me. And so yeah, th those are the people I'd like to shout out. Other than that, I'd love to shout out my wonderful wife for always supporting me and listening to my data talk constantly, and me pitching these new ideas. She's actually at a very nerdy banking conference this week, so I'm excited to shout out her. I was like, oh, I'll follow the conference on Twitter and let you know if there's anything that pops up, like free giveaways or anything. She's like, okay, you do that. But yeah, she's always been supportive, and just an awesome partner for me in my life. So.
That is awesome. Everyone, hang on. Don't leave yet. Keep listening to hear Eric and Bo McCready on the clip from the first episode of Data After Hours. Eric, thanks again for coming on.
Yeah, absolutely, Zach. Thank you so much for having me. It was great to catch up with you, and look forward to seeing you in a few weeks out in San Diego.
This is Data After Hours.
Hey, Bo, welcome to the show.
Hey, Eric, thanks so much for having me. Super excited to be here.
Yeah, I'm super pumped to have you as our inaugural guest on the show. I honestly have no idea how all this is going to play out, but we're just going to roll with it and see how it goes.
Can't wait.
Awesome. All right. Can you briefly share just how you ventured into BI and data throughout your career?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I would start by saying the cliche that I have a little bit of an unconventional background for someone who's in BI. But as you and I both know, we've been in this community for a little while now, and it feels like there is no conventional background. So, so back when I was in school, I actually did my master's in public policy and my doctorate in educational leadership at the University of Wisconsin. And kind of along the way, I was learning, you know, research methods, program evaluation, taking statistics courses, you know, as I went. And, you know, partway through my PhD, I kind of soured on the idea of becoming an academic and thought, at least at this point, I'm gonna go out and I'm gonna get a job and, you know, have some of that real world experience so that if I come back and teach someday, you know, I'll have that that basis to build on. And so I ended up getting a job at the local school district in Madison, Wisconsin, as I guess kind of the first analyst slash researcher in a new department that was spinning up. And one of the very first things I did in my first week on that job, my boss was kind of a casual fan of data visualization stuff, and he sent me down to Chicago to do a workshop taught by Edward Tufte, who obviously is you know, one of the biggest names in this field. And you know, from there I was kind of hooked in just the whole art and science of data visualization, and was able to kind of start bringing that into you know, my career really from that point forward. So I have been using Tableau since 2012. I think my first Tableau conference would have been 2016, right here in Austin. I didn't live here yet, but it was a nice preview of what was to come. And yeah, have gotten more involved with the Tableau community more publicly, you know, since probably about 2018. And yeah, I eventually made the transition out of education and into the tech world. But yeah, I guess started with, you know, a history bachelor's and a couple policy degrees in grad school, and eventually ended up here.
Awesome. Yeah, I definitely echo what you're saying about the unconventional background. I think I haven't met anybody in the Tableau community that has gone, you know, to school for data analytics or anything like that. Yeah. I started out in the biology field, and my wife always laughs at me because she's like, "Oh, you're going to be a doctor?" So obviously that didn't work out. So here we are. Could you share just a little bit about where you work now and just your role there, if you're able to?
Yeah, absolutely. So I have been with Apple for about 4 years now. And yeah, I can't really talk too much about the specifics, but I do manage a data science team here at Apple out of the Austin office.
Sweet. Perfect. Thank you so much. So when you're not at Apple pushing updates to my phone, so I'm required to buy the latest version, what are you doing outside of those working hours?
Yeah, so I know we'll have a chance to dive into, you know, a few different things, but I think, you know, folks in the data community probably have seen me, you know, most often posting about screen printing. And that's a hobby that my wife and I got into just a few years ago, but has been something that has really kind of, you know, taken life for us and kind of brought, you know, brought a new thing that we can work on together, that we can have a lot of fun doing. And yeah, that's been the number one right now. We've been printing, working on making shirts and posters for a little over, I guess, yeah, 2 or 3 years now. And we've started the pie chart press imprint for our for the stuff that we end up sharing out into the world. And yeah, that's the big one right now.
Yeah, that's for anybody that follows Bo on any social media, you would definitely know this about him. I think screen printing is one of the more interesting hobbies I've seen come out of just the data community. So how did you get started in that? What came in that you're like, hey, this is something I want to try or take on?